Hey Northwest Ohio, are you tired of just surviving? Are you ready for some fresh ideas? You've come to the right place. The Thrive Tribe 419 podcast features local experts in wellness and experiencing the best life has to offer in the Midwest. Let's thrive together.
Hey guys, it's breastfeeding month, and who better to talk to about this topic and any kind of food or eating related topic than Brooke Gordon from Beetroot. I just got done interviewing this really cool lady. She talked to me about her breastfeeding journey with her little guy and weaning him to solid foods according to the Weston A. Price Foundation's protocol for baby-led weaning. And we also talked about what she's doing with her company, Beetroot, how she got started. We talked a lot about our health journeys and how food has helped us. And she educated me a little bit more on GMOs. I have to admit, this is one area that I really wasn't familiar with. Well, maybe I was familiar with it, but I didn't understand it very well, so she scared me a little bit. So tune in for that. She's got a lot of great information. Also wanted to let you all know that the Thrive Tribe, which is you and all your friends who are hopefully listening to this podcast, are specially invited to Foodie Fest, which is happening in September, and I will put some information in the show notes about that. Foodie Fest is happening in Defiance, Ohio, at a little place called Cabin Fever Coffee, and it's going to be totally cool. So I think that if you listen to this podcast, if you listen to Thrive Tribe 419, you are probably going to enjoy this little foodie fest, especially if you live out in the middle of nowhere like I do, and it's hard to make friends that are like-minded and are interested in maybe more local providers of information, of whole foods, that kind of thing. You're really going to enjoy this. So I just wanted to throw that out there. Right now I'm going to read you a formal introduction on Brooke, and then we will get started with the podcast. Brooke grew up in Antwerp, Ohio, and attended Defiance College for Business. She graduated with her bachelor's in 2010 and soon started working for a manufacturer as the marketing director. After having many inquiries about her plant-powered food photos on Instagram, which is really a great Instagram feed, by the way, Brooke left corporate in January 2015 and started an educational company called Beetroot. Within the last year, she had her first baby, and she and her husband, Dalton, built their dream home on the family farm in Cecil, Ohio. And if you follow her Instagram feed, Beetroot Brooke, she has pictures of food that she's made in this fabulous kitchen of hers, and her kitchen is beautiful too, so check that out. She has big plans for Beetroot, all with the goal of teaching people how to eat to live well. Healing with whole foods is the tagline of Beetroot, which tells a glimpse of her story, how she was direly fatigued with hypothyroid disease and then reclaimed her health with nutrient-dense foods. Brooke desires a storefront for Beetroot in Defiance, since that's where her business began to take root, and she spent the last 10 years there and loves it. She just wants to be a lighthouse for eating to enjoy life, and knows the plans will morph as she seeks to fulfill Defiance's need for wholesome, fresh options. Brooke loves sports from volleyball to golf and loves being outdoors in her kayak or on her road bike. She enjoys deep friendships, books about the Appalachian Trail, cooking, and quality time with her little family. And I think you're really going to enjoy this podcast, so let's go ahead and dive in. Hey, Brooke, welcome to the Thrive Tribe 419 podcast. It's so good to have you here tonight.
Hello.
Hi. So we're going to dive right in and get started. You're the owner of something called Beetroot, and I'd like to know more about what that is and why you started it and how you came up with the name and all of that good stuff.
Yeah, Beetroot is a tiny little startup company. Really, it came about in the oddest way because I really had no plans of it. People just started asking me about all the pictures I was posting on Instagram and Facebook of, at the point, it was all this plant-based stuff. It was like sweet potato and black bean enchiladas, and it was like vegan sushi rolls, and people were just really curious. So they asked me to host a class, and so I hosted one at Defiance College. And like 30 people came out for the first session.
Wow.
So I was like, okay, people really have an interest in this. And at the time, I was a little disenchanted with my job in more of a corporate setting. I was the marketing director at a company. And so I was like, do I jump now and run with this idea that I think could be something, you know, before I have kids? And so I thought, yeah, I think it's time. And so right after I left that position, I had hosted an event, and there was like, at that time, it was almost doubled. It was like 60 people showed up to that event. It was like a meal planning session as well as me telling my story. And it was at the college again, so there was like 60 people that showed up to that.
Wow.
And so I wanted to do something with this, and I want it to grow into something bigger and more of, I just want to be the central, I guess, lighthouse for health and wellness, like, that people have somewhere to go to, because there really isn't a whole lot of that in our area. And so I wanted to be a lighthouse and a resource for people in Defiance as far as health, because that was something I didn't have, you know, when I was going through a lot of health issues.
Yeah.
So right now I'm utilizing the building blocks that I have, which is the granola bars that I'm making that get sold to retailers, like their Cabin Fever coffee, corporate speaking engagement. So I'll speak at, like, I did one for the Pauling Library health plan. So the people that are on their health plan, I did corporate speaking for them. And I'm doing the luncheon for the Zonta Women's Luncheon this fall. There's like 250 women that come to an event in October.
Okay.
Every year. It's typically centered around cancer survivors.
And that's in Defiance as well?
It's in Defiance.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So I do the granola bars, corporate speaking, and I always do events, either community events, huge community events, or I'll do classes as well. So that's what I'm working with now, and then I'll build it up to, eventually I'd like a storefront in Defiance so I could offer people some healthier food options, because we have about nothing in Defiance, and it's,
yeah,
it's so frustrating.
I'm really excited about that. I hope you get to that point, because
yeah,
we really do need that, especially outside of, like, you know, we're located here in Defiance between Toledo and Fort Wayne.
Mm-hmm.
And when you go about an hour either way, you start, or maybe even less than an hour,
mm-hmm,
you know, we're just in the middle of cornfields here,
mm-hmm,
and we're surrounded by food,
mm-hmm,
but we kind of live in like a healthy Whole Foods desert almost,
mm-hmm,
not only not having access to those stores that sell,
mm-hmm,
Whole Foods, but also the knowledge isn't,
mm-hmm,
there either.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really, it's hopeful to me as a liver amongst cornfields, as you know, that someone here is doing something,
mm-hmm,
you know, that there's a little bit of a movement starting.
Yeah.
And to hear that you've had such good turnout at your events,
yeah,
so far is really heartening to me.
Yeah.
To know that, you know, there are like-minded people out there,
mm-hmm,
and that people are discovering health through food.
Mm-hmm.
That's just so cool.
Yeah, it is cool. People are getting the idea. People are emailing me and saying, you know, I feel like crap, I have a lot more to live for, I have a lot going for me, I really want to feel better, or where should I start? I love those emails. Those are the best ones to get, by the way. Like,
yay, another person.
It's like chocolate avocado ice cream.
Oh, that is good.
Yeah, when I was plant-based and feeling so much better, I was like, I felt like I couldn't take a night off of cooking, because I was like, I really can't go anywhere in Defiance to grab something. I just can't get anything.
I understand that.
Like an option. And so one day I was in what was called the Village Square, which is now Just Be Original, which is two doors down from Cabin Fever.
Yeah.
I walked in there, and you can get like bulk stuff. I would get like bulk oats or whatever there.
That's where I got a lot of my things.
Really?
Before too. I was so sad when they left.
I know. But I was in there one day, and I just said, it was when I was still working in my corporate job, and I said, man, I just want to open up like a plant-based meal delivery service. And
yes,
the girl behind the counter, she goes, well, I'm an organic produce farmer. And I said, you are? And yeah, so that's Kristen Bauer, and she and her husband run Black Creek Organic Farm.
Okay.
And so now they're just good friends, and I've known them for a couple years, and they just make the best produce, and they moved to Kauai for 7 years to learn organic produce farming. And now they live outside of Defiance, they live in Nay.
Oh, it would be hard to come back after all of that.
They sent me there. My husband and I went and stayed on Kauai at an organic produce farm, Olan Organic Farm, and so we stayed in this bungalow above this organic farm, and you could go down to the farm and get whatever you wanted.
Sounds like paradise.
It was something like paradise. When my husband was making me green smoothies from, you know, pineapple and banana, that was right there on the. It was great.
The best pineapple and banana you've probably ever had in your life.
It was pretty amazing. So then, yeah, Kristen and I, we have worked together, and she comes to all my events, and she supports me, and they're at the farmer's market every week on Thursdays at the Defiance Farmer's Market.
Well, I've probably run into her before and just didn't know who she was.
Yeah, probably.
Because it sounds like we hang out in the same places.
It's funny because, you know, there's people like that are doing amazing things, and she has this amazing experience, and she's an organic produce farmer in the middle of GMO Central, you know?
Yeah.
But people like that don't toot their horns. They don't say, and by the way, you should know, I'm an organic produce farmer, and we went to Kauai and studied this for 7 years. So that's one reason I like to do what I do, is to toot their horns and to let people know, like, there's some super cool stuff going on centered around food, which is essential to, you know, a strong community and people.
Yeah, I think I see a future podcast person here, another interview that needs to happen.
There's a lot of them, I'm sure.
There's
just so many people that are not only getting informed and getting excited about it, but then they're doing something. They're starting
they're walking the walk.
Right.
Yeah. That's awesome. So how did you come up with the name Beetroot? Because a beetroot is not, it's not the root of the beet. The beet is the root, right?
Well, nobody's presented me with that question, but actually my company was Back to Roots when I started. Because I wanted people to get back to roots.
Okay.
Back to what our roots were, you know, 100 years ago.
Uh-huh.
And long story short, but somebody tried to sue me over that name.
No.
And so I had to change it to Beetroot. I changed my name to Beetroot last summer. And it was short, it was quick, you know that it's foods and whole foods oriented, and what kind of went with Brooke, so Beetroot Brooke.
Yeah,
so
I like that. She's Beetroot Brooke on Amazon, or not Amazon, Instagram. You're not on Amazon, not yet.
I'm not being sold on Amazon.
It just rolls off the tongue.
What Amazon does?
Amazon. I do shop on Amazon sometimes, but I love Instagram, and I love your Instagram feed.
Thanks.
The pictures are so beautiful, and you really get a sense of, like, I feel like you, when you take a picture of the food, and a lot of people do this on Instagram, there's like a whole foods movement on there that's so huge, but your pictures are just so yummy, like, I just want to
dive into
them. I get, like, food jealousy. Oh, it looks so good. And I know, like, because I cook that way too a lot, it takes a lot of effort to cook that way. Mm-hmm. So I have an appreciation for that. And I love seeing people's Instagram feeds that are full of food, because it's inspiring. Like, I can look at something and think, that's so simple. Why didn't I think of that? Mm-hmm. I can cook that, you know? All right, let's shift gears and talk about Foodie Fest. Tell me all about Foodie Fest. And do people need tickets? Who's going to be there? Mm-hmm. What is it?
Well, it came about because of the end of the theater event. My filmmaker started challenging me for a bigger event. So that's how Foodie Fest, or he talked about Veg Fest. That's how the idea was created. And so I just thought it would be a really cool idea, and I happen to think the coolest ideas are usually the toughest ones to, you know, round up and a lot of work. So I'm usually signing on to a lot of work, but The Foodie Fest will be at September 16th, kind of like 9 to 5. And there'll be learning sessions in the upstairs of Cabin Fever from kind of the morning hour until about lunchtime.
And Cabin Fever is located on Clinton Street in Defiance, Ohio, mm-hmm. for anybody wondering.
Yeah, downtown, kind of the right in the middle of downtown is mm-hmm. where I'd say.
It's a great place.
It's a unique place. It's the spot.
Yeah.
So there'll be learning sessions in the upstairs of Cabin Fever by a chef and naturopathic doctor for the first hours. There'll be vendors set up. I haven't decided all those time frames yet, but there'll be vendors set up most of the day, and then more specifically food vendors around like the lunchtime hour and after lunchtime. And then there'll be musicians set up in the arena behind Cabin Fever as well. So no tickets needed beforehand. Free admission to the event. The only thing that will cost is if there's special events going on during like the learning sessions, and of course if there's people sketching art and people that are offering other products and goods for sale.
Okay, that's good to know.
Oh, so the people that will be there. That's something else you asked me about.
Yeah. So I think you had mentioned Dr. White, who has been on this podcast before.
She'll be teaching a learning session.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then your friend, the chef?
My friend, the chef, Jody, will be there. So she has been a chef in Atlanta for various celebrities. Like one of them is Barack Obama that she cooked for. And she just had a lot of culinary experience in Atlanta. And then she came back and worked in the Fort Wayne Food Co-op in the kitchen for a long time. And then she worked in health and wellness, so in like vitamins and supplements. So she has a really well-rounded experience. So she'll be teaching sessions. And then as far as vendors go, the people that will be there will be like local farmers and people that are in on the slow food movement. So like Black Creek Organic Farm, which is a produce farm, and then Canal Junction Meats and Cheese, which is the grass-fed farm near Five Span. They'll be there.
Uh-huh.
And then some body products that are toxin-free or organic would be by Naturally Simplified.
Uh-huh.
She'll be there.
Yep, I have some of her stuff. I really like it.
Yeah?
Yeah, it's nice. Stuff. It's like putting food on your body almost.
I saw a brand for a similar product called Skin Food.
Oh, okay. Yeah that makes sense.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh.
And then the other one is a local soap maker who makes real lard soaps, and she makes vegan soaps too, which is our Artesmia soaps. Forgive me if I say that wrong, Kim.
That's a pretty name. Artesmia?
So I probably said it wrong, whatever it was. But that's who is there so far. And then I'm open to other food vendors. If there's food trucks or mobile food operations, I do have a quality standard that they have to meet. But that's who else will be a part of it. It will be anybody that has a food operation that can serve up some good food.
Yeah, so do you have applicants for food vendors at this point? Are you kind of collecting?
I haven't had anybody that could step up to the plate yet, but I haven't.
Okay.
A lot of people don't know about it. A lot of people don't even know the event is happening. So I'm approaching people, and if anybody has anybody that would be a good fit, then they can send them my way too. I did have somebody message me today about teas that they had. Bubble teas is what they call
them. Oh, yeah. I've had bubble tea.
Yeah, so she wants to do.
Okay, yeah. That would be fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, I hope some more people step up, because we need to bring in some really good food to this area.
Yeah.
And, maybe if they see that there is a customer base for that, mm-hmm. maybe they'll come back,
mm-hmm.
whoever they are.
I hope that I can help some local food operations, if they're interested. If they're interested but not maybe really sure about a wholesome option, if I can help them figure out a wholesome option or two to serve that day. My hope would be that not only it could potentially change what their offerings are, or maybe just even open them to the idea of changing it, but also that people would love it so much that maybe they would see, I could have some offerings that would be pretty wholesome that I could actually sell people in Defiance. So
it would be so nice to be able to go out to eat in Defiance and know, there was more. I can think of maybe two places where we go as a family, and it's more than just getting a salad,
mm-hmm.
where they actually have, a gluten-free option or mm-hmm. a dairy-free option, or they're mm-hmm. willing to work with you on that. And I have a friend who has a celiac family, and they can't eat out at all,
mm-hmm.
And I would just love to see something come here.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have to offer all wholesome food, just something, you know, mm-hmm. something different.
Right.
Besides salad. Because I can get a salad anywhere, but that's boring.
Right.
It would be nice to, you know, get a sandwich somewhere. Get something real yummy. And a donut.
You keep talking about donuts.
I want donuts. I want gluten-free, dairy-free. They can even not be dairy-free. They can have butter in them.
Have you ever made any?
I have not.
You haven't?
No. Well, I tried one time, and they did not turn out very well. But I think maybe I need to get, like, a donut pan.
Mm-hmm.
Because I tried to make them. They were, like, lump, like a lump donut. I don't know. It was.
I've made some that were snort, like, you could just, like, just, eat them all.
So good?
Yeah.
Probably.
That and,
did you put them on Instagram?
Probably.
I'll have to go back and look.
Hey, word on the street is there's an organic sandwich shop coming to Defiance. But it's just a rumor at this point.
Ooh.
But I'll take any.
You have
I'll take any wholesome rumor.
Yeah, I have hope. Well, there's always a rumor that Chipotle was going to come here too, but it hasn't happened yet. So.
I could eat Chipotle every other day.
I could too. Or Balance. If Balance came to Defiance.
I don't think I've eaten at Balance.
Oh.
Is it the little like.
It's Pan Asian.
Okay.
Yeah, they have like little tacos and bowls that you can get, and it's all fresh food and it's locally served.
Buy into the franchise. What are you waiting on?
Ugh. I do not want to go into the food industry. I'll just say that right now. I actually am teaching myself how to cook. My mom is a fabulous cook. But she never taught me how to cook because she loved it so much that it was her time.
Mm-hmm.
So when she was in the kitchen, she made us all go. She would say, go do something constructive. And that was not cooking. Mm-hmm. You know, do anything else. Leave mm-hmm. me alone. And then she would serve us this fabulous food. But I never learned how to cook. So
did you grow up eating good food? Like good
I grew up a vegetarian, actually. My mom was a vegetarian. Once in a while, we had maybe chicken. I think we had fish once.
Okay.
So I don't know.
Okay.
So we would go to friends' houses and they'd be like, you want a hamburger? And I'd be like, what kind of chicken is that? I really had no clue. So my mom is not a vegetarian anymore. Neither am I.
Mm-hmm.
I consider myself a recovering vegetarian because mm-hmm. that eating that way wasn't serving my health very well.
Mm-hmm.
Also, eating junk wasn't serving my health very mm-hmm. well. So I had to learn how to cook and learn how to buy meat, and then I started learning about, you know, how to buy healthier forms of meat
mm-hmm.
and how to cook it
mm-hmm.
and not being afraid to touch it.
Yeah, well, I didn't know how to cook either when I started getting healthier. Like, this was like 5-6 years ago. I almost couldn't cook anything. I always tell people that I can vividly remember when my husband could cook. He was a good cook. And right now we both just kind of alternate, like, it's not really set, but if there's a recipe and we have groceries, either of us can do it just fine.
Awesome.
Yeah, so he's really helpful in that regard, but I can remember one time he left for the weekend, he was away for work, and there was a bratwurst, like a packaged Johnsonville bratwurst in the fridge, and I was like, I'm hungry, but I don't know how to cook this, and I put a pan of simmering water on the stove and like simmered it in water. Of course, that didn't really do a very good job cooking it, but I was totally clueless about cooking. And my mom, same thing. My mom just kind of waited on us hand and foot, and so she didn't really like involve me in the kitchen, and so I didn't know a thing. And I didn't take cooking classes, and I didn't have anybody, you know, teach me anything. But I just picked up a cookbook and just started reading the lines.
Yeah.
And, like, trying to figure that out, what the citrus press was, and, you know,
how
to zest something, or whatever. I just started learning, and so now it's kind of fun, because Dalton and I can just, like, tag team dinner, or, like, I get stuck doing something. Just like tonight, I came tonight, and I left a couple things out for him, and a recipe, and he can just run with it. He knows what to do, so.
That's great. And then, how old is your little boy?
He's a little over a year. He's like 15 months.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So, is he eating food now as well?
Yep. I should have started him on solids sooner, but he started eating more solids around 8 months, and I was making him purees. It was a really daunting task for me initially. I really was
not sure
what to feed him, and that was when I started getting a little bit more into the nourishing tradition stuff. I don't know if you've heard of Weston A. Price. And
I love the Weston A. Price Foundation. So, I listen to their podcast,
okay,
too.
I do, too.
Weiss Traditions.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I started reading their stuff when I was learning how to feed him, and then that kind of shaped how I was cooking for us as well. So I started getting more into cooking with, you know, doing chicken in the crock pot or doing some roasts. And
did you try the liver? I think they don't, aren't they the ones that suggest liver as a first food for a baby?
He was getting pureed liver, and he still eats liver, but he wants to eat more with his fingers, so I don't puree it. But he was doing the grass-fed chicken liver from Canal Junction Farm, and
that's why I didn't do liver, because when I broke my arm was about the time I needed to start. And I couldn't go, drive to go get, and I didn't want to just go get it from the grocery store. So we just did vegetables.
Yeah, gotcha.
So, and then meats, of course. So. Yeah. But, so he liked the liver.
I like the liver. They're big on raw egg yolk and spoon feeding it. And I was actually doing that. I know that
did you do that?
Probably freaks you out. Probably freaks a lot of people out. We did.
I can't do it. I haven't gone there yet. But I eat my own placenta. So what's my problem? I don't know. Oh, I can't eat a raw egg, though.
I mean, it doesn't sound good to me, but he liked it, and the risks involved were very slim as far as, you know, there being any salmonella.
I know, I've read about that. The salmonella thing is really, it's more of a risk with fruits and vegetables is what I've read. So.
Right.
Who knows?
Yeah, so he loves earthy stuff, and he loves, you know, about anything I make as far as anything from, you know, grilled salmon to veggies to, we just had some, Dalton made some cayenne fries out of the oven, but then we kept the cayenne pepper off of his and gave him, and he was just snarfing that down. He tends to like veggies and earthy stuff more than, like, fruits or sweeter stuff. Like, I'll make, like, homemade banana ice cream and give him some of that.
Oh.
And he'll enjoy it, but he tends to like the chicken liver and stuff like that more.
Yeah. My baby does too. She is a meat eater.
Yeah.
She likes meat, and she loves peas for some reason. Like, she'll just gobble up peas. But, she's always liked meat, and she likes fish. And this just blows me away, because as a kid, I didn't really eat meat. So to watch them love meat is sort of strange to me. But I guess it's, you know, knowing like how to do the traditional foods now and everything, and how much better it is for your health if you're selecting the right kinds of meat. I'm hoping that they're getting a better start on their health. You know, when I was a kid, we just did what we knew was best, and you know, you learn a little. I think each generation like learns a little bit more, and hopefully now they'll pass this on to their kids if they have kids, and I just hope that they have better health than I do in the future.
Same here. So. And I just, Dalton thanked me the other day for being diligent about what I feed August and, you know, putting in the work and effort. And
it is a lot of work.
It is tons of work, but there's no going back. Like, what other option is there? And now that I know. But I also said to Dalton, since I know better, since I know how to feed him, since I knew there was a better way, since I read about these, like, I have an obligation now to do my best and feed him well.
Yeah.
And so, and I'm not saying he's going to have perfect health. You just never know what can disrupt health. And, you know, we live on a conventional farm now, so there's always risks involved, especially environmental with that. But I'm doing my best to try and set him up for good health. Health in the ways that I can control it, and the other ways that I can't control it, I don't lose sleep over it. But for August, he has never been on any medication. He's never had an infection. He's never taken anything, and he has really never had any illness. He had croup in like December, and that was it. So
wonderful.
He's doing great so far. But I don't, you know, rub it in with people and tell people that he's going to be just set up for success, and he's going to be so dang healthy, which he's healthy and strong, and he's doing great, but you just really don't know what all can impact health, and so I don't get overconfident about it.
And you're just providing the best foundation you can for him, mm-hmm. and you have to hope for the best, because we really can't control everything, mm-hmm. especially in the world that we live in, mm-hmm. you know, we're exposed to toxins all the time, mm-hmm. so you just have to do your best. Mm-hmm. Hey guys, I just wanted to jump in here really quick and remind you that this podcast is a labor of love for me. That means that I spend my own time, my own money, and my own resources, including babysitters and family members, to get this podcast produced and out to you. So, if you like listening to the podcast, would you please do me a favor and leave a review on iTunes? You can do that by going to iTunes and searching for Thrive Tribe 419, and it'll bring us up, and you can click on us and leave a review. That would mean the world to me, because I would know that this information is getting out to you and to other people. The other thing about leaving a review is that it'll boost us up in the health and wellness sector on iTunes, and other people will be able to find us. And this is what it's about, right? It's about cultivating our tribe. So thank you for leaving a review, and enjoy the rest of the podcast. And since it is World Breastfeeding Week, and I found out yesterday, it's actually the whole month of August that there are things going on for World Breastfeeding Awareness and Education. So I thought we should cover this topic a little bit, since we are talking about food, mm-hmm. and milk is the first food that a baby gets. Mm-hmm. I've nursed both of my girls exclusively. They've never received any formula, and I have no judgment against moms who decide to use formula. Mm-hmm. If that's what works for you, that's great. But I decided to nurse my first, I nursed her as long as I could, and she nursed until 14 months, and then one day just stopped and didn't want to nurse anymore. I don't know what it was exactly, but she was just done. She went from nursing almost around the clock to not wanting to nurse anymore. And I had started her on food, you know, just regular food, and I think that she just liked that better at that point, so she was like, I'm done, and she still likes to eat a lot. And then my second, I always thought my second would be easier because I knew what I was doing, but we've actually encountered a lot more issues.
Really?
I had a staph infection after she was born, mm-hmm. which caused mastitis really bad, mm-hmm. and I think the staph was probably from the hospital.
Yeah.
But we got through that and had a couple more bouts of mastitis. Now we're dealing with, we're just getting over thrush. It's just been a constant battle, and she got teeth a lot sooner than my first, so that's been interesting as well. But how has it gone for you? let's hear your story.
Well, I didn't know what to expect. I was hardly ever around younger kids, and there was no babies in my family, and so mm-hmm. I had no idea what to expect as far as really raising a kid, let alone breastfeeding. But because I knew of the health benefits, that was my plan, was to breastfeed. And I didn't really realize how many people are concerned about not producing enough milk and all these issues. I had no idea that that was something that I could be up against. Uh-huh. And I really didn't think I would enjoy it. I was like, I think this is going to be just an uncomfortable thing that I'm just going to do because it's healthy for him. And I, within the first day, I said to my husband, I'm like, I really like this. Like, it's just like it, it's, everybody says it's a great bonding experience. It is a great bonding experience. I read this quote that said that breastfeeding provides three essential things for a baby. It was like warmth, comfort, and closeness, and nourishment. Mm-hmm. And I was like, that's pretty beautiful that it provides all that. And I read this also, another fact from the Weston A. Price Foundation, that a healthy mother, a mother who's eating diverse and really well, will have over 100 fats in her breast milk for the baby. And so, it's gone really well, and it's not because of all my preparation, because I really didn't have much preparation, other than I was just eating well, mm-hmm. and I made sure to have, I took food in the hospital with me, I had food afterwards.
I did that too.
Dalton was cooking for me every day uh-huh. after we got out, and was just making a lot of wholesome food, and I was just drinking a lot of water, tons of water, mm-hmm. really
Did you make a lot of freezer meals before you had your baby? Did you do that?
We didn't. And so it was a little chaotic after Dalton went back to work because it was... I didn't expect all that. I didn't know what to expect this.
No, you never do. You kind of get hit with it, and you're like, whoa, this is a lot more intense than I thought it would be, right?
It was, yeah, it was, he was quite fussy, so I couldn't really, we couldn't hardly eat without, you know, him crying or us bouncing with our foot, you know, it's just like,
he was just tough.
He was just high maintenance.
Yeah.
But it's been a really great experience, and I'm really grateful I didn't have a bunch of roadblocks with it. And I like to be a resource if anybody, you know, has questions or... because I went to Henry County Hospital for my delivery, and then they had a great lactation consultant that worked with me. So she was helpful, too, like, to do a follow-up, like, 5 days after you're in the hospital to make sure that you're producing enough. And so,
nice.
Yeah.
That's very important. Because I think a lot of people struggle around that 5 day mark. Like you get engorged and it starts to hurt, and if you don't have help, what do you do? But with both babies, I got help from a lactation consultant. I didn't even see them face to face. Like one of them was helping me through. We were like chatting. I don't know. We were using something online, and then the other, and I was sending pictures. And then the second time, I was sending pictures to her, and then we were talking on the phone. And now I have a lactation consultant here in Defiance at Defiance Regional who just started, and she helped me work with my provider to get me on the right medication for thrush because it had gotten out of control. So unfortunately, I had to take medication, but it was. It was bad.
You gotta take it when you need it. I'm not opposed to all that stuff. It's just use it.
Yeah, I think there is definitely a need for Western medicine, and I've definitely gotten to that point a few times in the last year. But I am seeking that help less and less the farther I get with my health journey. So it's encouraging, but you do get setbacks sometimes, and I think there definitely is a place for it. You just have to know. You have to have your comfort zone and, yeah, all of that. That could be a totally different podcast. So it's been really good for you then. You've had a good experience?
It's been great. It's tons of work. I mean, you have to, you know, if there's sensitivities, then you got to take it out of your diet too. And so it's not easy, but I would say it's very rewarding. It does provide a different bonding experience and, I mean, totally nourishing, and it's also, like, a kind of a nice break, because you kind of always have to do it, and I'm a go-go-go person, and so it was a good time for me to slow down and just admire my baby.
Yes.
And it also just, it always kind of relaxes you, and just kind of, like, you almost want to go to sleep, and so it's a nice mom break that's you know, designed in there. So
yeah, I feel like at this point at 10 months it's the same. I didn't always feel that way about it because I had a lot of pain issues going on, but now we're getting to that point where you're right, you have to almost push the reset button. And she reminds me to do that because she has to eat and I have to provide that, so I have to sit down, and it is kind of a nice thing because it reminds me to stop. I have trouble with that, too. I like you said earlier, I like challenges. I like projects. And I can get kind of absorbed. So, yeah. So, and do you have do you go to a breastfeeding support group, or did you ever need one?
I don't. I mean, people talked about them, and I was like, what's that for?
Lucky you. You really weren't needing it.
I mean, I guess not. I tend to shy away from groups and, like, formal things. So, no, I didn't, but I heard that there was a good one at DRMC out here.
Yeah, there is. I actually went to their meeting last night, and it was just three of us.
Oh, really?
So it was kind of fun. But there have been a lot of moms there some months, and sometimes the last time I went before, I was the only one that came, plus the lactation consultant. So you just don't know sometimes they try to plan like a formal program, mm-hmm. and other times it's just to come, mm-hmm. talk about where you are in your breastfeeding journey, mm-hmm. get your questions answered. The lactation consultant is there. She's really nice. And I just like to go and like talk to other moms kind of about how things are going, mm-hmm. with them. And mm-hmm. I found such good support through that group when I broke my shoulder. They were bringing me meals.
Oh,
they,
really?
One of the girls drove to Michigan to get donor milk for me,
because
I had like a few days where I wasn't producing anything.
Mm-hmm.
So she went and got milk for me, and one of them got me a special breastfeeding pillow to like help because I couldn't hold my baby with one arm.
Wow.
I mean, they were just so supportive. So now I try to go to like kind of support other moms because I feel like I've been through the trenches and maybe I can offer some support.
Yeah.
It's a great foundation for your baby. And even if you can't do it full time,
right.
I mean, just a little bit of breast milk, I think, goes a long way. Mm-hmm. And it's so good for their immune systems, too.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to try to continue as long as
protections you can offer.
It's
invaluable.
Yeah, it really is. But it's not for everybody, and not everybody can do it, and that's okay too. But I always try to encourage other moms because I think a lot of moms want to,
mm-hmm.
and then they run into problems,
mm-hmm.
and they don't get the help that they need.
Mm-hmm.
And if they could fix the issue, then they would continue.
Mm-hmm.
So I just want to throw that out there, that if you are having problems,
mm-hmm.
feel free to contact me,
mm-hmm.
Contact a lactation consultant.
Mm-hmm.
If your doctor, and I've run into this, you go to your doctor and they don't know what to do, or
mm-hmm.
you feel like they're giving you the wrong advice,
mm-hmm.
go somewhere else. Like,
mm-hmm.
insist on getting help from
mm-hmm.
somebody, because it can really make or break your breastfeeding relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want to continue, you should be able to fix the problem,
mm-hmm.
and continue. Like, there's
mm-hmm.
somebody out there that can help you,
mm-hmm.
and sometimes you just have to fight for it a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my two cents, I guess,
yeah,
with breastfeeding. But I'm so glad it's been going well for you.
Thanks.
And he's still nursing.
He's
then
nursing.
Great.
Like a monster.
Yeah. He's a big boy.
He's like been at the 30 pound mark for a while.
Wow. You got some muscles carrying that kid around, I bet.
I've had to, that's been like the best exercise for me to kind of get back in shape, was not only like the calories burnt from breastfeeding, but also picking him up all the time. I put him in the backpack a lot and carry him around. And so that's been my biggest workout, and I really haven't done much else other than just like, you know, running after him. And so
that's a lot. Like, at the end of the day, you're tired.
Right. And then
you don't need to work out.
Then I'm usually doing some emails and like after I, you know, do dishes and so.
All right. So recently I watched a documentary called What the Health on Netflix. And when I was watching it, I was thinking of you because we had just sort of connected at that time.
Yeah.
And I had watched your documentary.
Yeah.
And I thought, okay, documentary, Whole Foods, Brooke, I wonder what she's thinking about that. So tell me what your thoughts are. And I know that we have a lot of similar opinions on this.
Yeah. Well, I happened to just run into it because, you know, when this all started, I was following very closely Rich Roll because I started listening to his podcast. And he's an ultra athlete, so he does double Ironman competitions. And he was totally vegan when he was doing that, and he was performing really well, and he's been vegan for the last, like, 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
So he has, like, the number one health and wellness podcast that's out there.
Yeah.
And so that's who I was listening to, and I knew he was in the film. So I started watching it one night on Netflix, and I was just appalled at, like, how extreme they were being, and I was just... They first started talking about processed meats, and I was like, yep, go get them. The processed meats are a big problem. And then they started swinging that into all animal products and, you know, equating eggs with cigarettes. And how is that possible that all of a sudden animal products are, you know, at the crux of all of our health issues when we've been consuming animal products for hundreds of years? That's not what's new in our food system. You know, what's
right.
new is... the added sugar into everything, GMOs and all the processed additives, stripping this, taking that, adding in dyes and flavoring. That's what's new. And I just wish that there's these camps of people bashing each other back and forth kind of in these like documentaries that have been coming out lately. And I just wish they would attack, you know, the real monsters of, you know, people that are, oh, GMOs and just all the corporations that are putting out junk and calling it food. So it was a little disenchanting, I guess you could say.
Yeah, I felt like they kind of threw the baby out with the bathwater.
Right.
You know, it was a little bit too much. Like, they took a leap that made sense, and then they took it a little too far.
Mm-hmm. And I've never had this happen where I had multiple people text me with a concern
yeah.
and say, like, hey, I watched What the Health, and I was just wondering what your thoughts are on it, because it, like, freaked them out. And
mm-hmm.
they were like, oh, this is scary, so what's Brooke think? What's she think of this? And it was just funny that people texted me and asked my opinion because I had actually happened to have watched some of it. I don't have a huge expert response to it, other than that's not, animal products aren't new in our food system. People have been thriving off of them for hundreds of years. And I said, and I did a post about this, you can find a correlation to about anything. You can try and draw a correlation to about anything, but the proof is in the pudding. The proof is in our lives, right? So
yeah.
for myself, like, I did feel better when I went vegan, but I took out all the junk from my life, so of course I felt better.
Uh-huh.
And I feel even better now.
Do
eat meat, and
mm-hmm.
I even do some dairy. I don't do a ton of dairy, and so yeah, I feel better now than when I was, and now I'm getting less sleep and all that stuff because I'm a mom, but yeah.
It comes
was,
with the territory. It does get better, though, unless you have another one.
I tell people that when I was at the lowest of the low in my health, I was sleeping like 12 hours a night, sleeping through class, and going home and getting into bed.
Uh-huh.
So I was sleeping like, you know, 14, 15 hours a
yeah,
day.
Me too.
And
I could not get caught up. I didn't feel like I was ever caught up on sleep. I was just tired all the time.
And I tell people I have more energy now. I feel better now getting, you know, disrupted 7 hours of sleep a night or 6 hours a night than I did back then. I was getting twice as much or even more sleep. And it was scary, and I felt very hopeless at the time. And it was like, I just wondered if I was ever going to be able to be a productive adult when I was at that point. Like, I was like, how am I going to have a real job and, you know, go to a job?
I think that you and I probably had the same kind of crisis happen, because I was at that point too. And now I feel better at 38 than I did at 28.
Yeah.
Because of the changes I've made. And most of them have been food.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's mostly revolved around food, and it's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I just want to shout it from the rooftops and tell everybody, you know, just read a label. Like, that's all you have to do. Or eat foods that don't have labels.
Right.
Like, it's really, it's not complicated.
Mm-hmm.
But it takes time.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a change. And you have to kind of make it a lifestyle. And,
mm-hmm.
and change is hard,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Totally. I heard on a podcast recently, they said, you know, 100 years ago, all you had to do was one, eat food, and it was all healthy, and
yeah.
it was all a great option, and
uh-huh.
you didn't have to think twice about it. And now, you just have to be really proactive,
mm-hmm.
you have to read stuff, you have to be aware, you have to know what's going on, you have to be very selective, and you have to ask a lot of questions. And people don't like questions, even around your food, you know, like, I can't tell you how many eyes rolled I've had, or people, you know, scoffing at me asking a question about, say, like, for one, there was an apple orchard in, like, Napoleon that I was wanting to pick apples at.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, I'm just curious. You're spray.
I'm guilty of that, too.
And everybody is so annoyed at the question. And
uh-huh.
how sad is that? That we can't ask questions about what we're going to put into our bodies. It's
yeah.
just...
I would rather eat an apple that has a worm in it than eat an apple that's been sprayed. And people think that's crazy, but I don't eat the worm. But, you know, I eat the good part of the apple and I throw the rest down for the wildlife to have. And, you know, people think that that's nuts. And I'm like, I would, you know, I don't know. I could go off on a tangent on that, too. But you're right. The results are in your own health. And I'm a skeptic. I'm not.
Mm-hmm.
I never considered myself, I don't know, an alternative, like, crunchy person.
Mm-hmm.
This was all found due to a real need, mm-hmm. and
mm-hmm.
look where it's got me now. And I still have health problems that I'm working on because of all the years of neglecting.
Yeah.
I mean, between I moved away when I was 19 years old, and I didn't know how to cook. So I was eating junk almost
mm-hmm.
all the time
mm-hmm.
until the time I had my bad health crisis at 27 years old. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, that's a long time. And even before that, I mean, my mom
mm-hmm.
was a good cook, but she didn't cook the way that I do now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she wasn't like clean,
mm-hmm.
clean cooking.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I feel like, and of course I got all these vaccinations, which I had a vaccine reaction and,
mm-hmm.
So I feel like I'm undoing a lot of that,
mm-hmm.
you know, but I really do feel better now than I did 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I know it's because of food.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, yeah.
What a novel idea that we're like really paying attention to what we're putting into our bodies.
And, you know, when I go shopping, I'm one of those people who like always checks out other people's shopping carts. So bad. Like, I'm looking to see what other people are buying.
And almost nobody looks remotely close to my cart. Like,
mine either.
You know what I mean?
Mine either. I'm not judging. I don't judge. Like, I'm just so curious about what people are eating because I used to eat that way too. And I am curious. Like, what are you eating? And the things that people consume, it just seems like there is this trust in food. Like, if you buy it at the grocery store, it's food. It's nutritious food, and that's not really the case.
Just because it's on the shelves, just because restaurants serve it, does not mean that it won't cause disease or that it won't give your body a good environment for cancer. Isn't that insane? People do trust it, that because it's on shelves, then they believe that it has been, you know, inspected or authorized by the powers that be, and
even those powers aren't always quite right.
Right.
You know, there's a lot of
the deputy
politics
in the deputy of the FDA even admits that he's not sure the amount of chemicals that are in the food supply at this point, because they were letting a lot of people self-regulate for a long time factories.
Mm-hmm.
So
right, and now organic farms are one of the most regulated types of farms,
mm-hmm.
which blows my mind. But anyway. Yeah, but there does seem to be a blind trust, and people roll their eyes at me, too, because they're like, here, have this food, and I'm like, well, does it have blah, 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 and they're like, I don't know, you want me to dig the thing out of the garbage and read it to you, and I'm like, yes, please, and they're like, really? Oh, it's awful, but yeah.
That's so true.
But I used to eat
mm-hmm.
the same way.
Mm-hmm.
I really did. I didn't know, and now I do, but... It's kind of funny looking back, and now I'm a food snob, and I didn't even like to cook.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm just now, like, just in the last year or so, have really started to enjoy cooking, because
mm-hmm.
I think now that I know what I'm doing and I can make something turn out well,
mm-hmm.
it tastes good,
mm-hmm.
and I know that it's not gonna hurt me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not gonna make me feel sick, and it might even promote health.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just, it's like inspiring.
Mm-hmm.
Do you feel the same way?
Yeah. I just wrote in my blog that I shared about just how I started this whole thing, and wrote a little bit about my story. I just said that food was a source of anxiety, of just lots of confusion around food and not sure what to eat, and, you know, kind of dieting. But, you know, one diet says that, you know, you shouldn't have carbs, and it was just... it was a big source of confusion. And now it's a really rewarding experience that I feel much more confidence in, even though I'm not really a natural chef in the kitchen. And it can be stressful for me to kind of think about meal planning and getting items. But
mm-hmm.
it's just it totally changes the way that of what food means to me. As you know, before it was, before it had a lot of anxiety and confusion around it, and now it's like delicious, nourishing, and rewarding. And I just like the idea of feasting and enjoying the meal. And I love Dalton cooking for me delicious food.
Yeah, I'm a little jealous because my husband is, I always call him the spaghetti chef, but he's actually come a long way.
Really?
But, yeah, we're getting there. We're definitely getting there. Like, he can do a few more recipes now.
Yeah.
And I know, like, you know, he can, if he takes the girls out like he did tonight, like, I know he can choose food for them that is not going to hurt them. Might not be the healthiest because they're eating out, but it's not going to hurt them. So he's getting there. And he even, like, I did the grocery shopping the other day and I came home and he was even, like, double reading labels. And he caught a couple things that I wouldn't have purchased. But I was just, like, putting stuff in the cart, and I thought I knew.
Yeah.
And he's like, this has such and such in it. You told me not to get that. And I was like, you're right. Like, I screwed up. Good, you know, good catch. So, yeah, it's
good,
funny.
Good job, yeah.
Yeah, so he's, like, even more of a stickler about some things than I am now. But I still do, like, he does the shopping a lot of times, but I'll do the cooking. So it's sort of, still sort of a team effort. All right, so we had talked a little bit about how our food is different these days, and you had mentioned GMOs, and I've read a lot of conflicting information about GMOs, and honestly, I'm a little bit confused about GMOs myself.
Okay, yeah.
I feel like I don't know a lot about why they're so bad. You know, and a lot of people say, like, well, you have GMOs in your garden. You know, you plant these seeds and they are genetically modified. You know, I don't know. Like, why is that bad? I'm not spraying chemicals on it. But, you know, I did buy it from Burpee Seeds, you know, which is GMO. So, like, what can you, please educate me, because I am just, I'm so confused about this GMO thing.
Yeah, well, I've told you numerous times I'm not an expert about it, but I guess I'd like to say I'm informed and I have a good amount of experience and I pay attention to, you know, things that are published and experts on the topic.
Okay.
So, I grew up around conventional chemical farming, so that was, my family had a farm in West Unity and it was like 400 or 500 acres. That's what I grew up around and that was normal. And now my father-in-law has a farm that's conventional as well, and so it's a fourth generation farm. And so for as long as that came out, and usually I believe that GMOs were more heavily used in like the 80s and 90s that it started being used more. And so for as long as I can remember, he's been doing it that way as well, and we just built a house there, so I have definitely have my interest piqued more from being around it and seeing it being sprayed and just having concern and kind of looking up things more about it. And my husband has a biology degree, so I kind of lean on him to help me understand some of this
great.
Stuff.
Oh, great. That's what we need. We need people to help us figure this out.
Yeah, well, he and I talk about... we talk about what we'll do if and when we inherit the farm, which, you know, eventually we will. I don't know, you know, what portion it will be and all that stuff. But, you know, when eventually we have land in our hands, what are we going to do with it? And we've talked about organic farming, and we both realize it's going to be work, you know, not only to convert it, but it'll be work to be an organic farmer in whatever way. It'll definitely be a
lot of work. Isn't it like a 7-year process or something?
I've heard that, like, you have to let it sit for 2 to 3 years and kind of let it turn over in order to be able to start anything. But I've heard various opinions on that. But I guess I'll tell you my understanding of this and just tell you why I tend to be cautious around GMOs. Well, a GMO is a genetically modified organism, and it's genetically modified for, you know, certain characteristics, and they change the genetic makeup and particularly to withstand more Roundup, and the active ingredient in Roundup is glyphosate.
Yeah, that's bad.
And glyphosate is most certainly used liberally and without much caution. And there really wasn't much research and study done on that before it kind of got widely released. And the thing is, when you have disease and cancer rates and just illness like crazy, we should be cautious about everything that's new in any fashion that is part of our health and the environment and our food. And GMOs are definitely new, and there was not a whole lot of testing done on that. And glyphosate, when it was first invented, was used to clean like boiler tanks because it would just melt off the,
wow,
the stuff. And then in 2000, Monsanto patented glyphosate as a broad spectrum antibiotic. So glyphosate works its way into the plant, inside the plant,
okay,
when it's sprayed. And so what do you think happens when it's in the plant and then it's
into
getting
the
consumed?
Food.
Yeah. And
so you can't wash it off.
You can't wash it off.
This is something that I did not know.
Okay. Honestly, it's kind of something newer for me, too, of understanding that. And I guess what I want to say is, if anybody's listening who is a farmer, is a farmer's wife, has, you know, a dad that's a farmer or whatever, first of all, I'm with you. I understand why people farm that way. And, you know, people have been farming that way for a long time, and it's how they've been taught. And to think about changing, or to think that, you know, your livelihood might be threatened by realizing things about what you're farming and what you're planting, I understand that. I guess I'd say that our future is at stake, and our children's health is at stake. And so it's something that we should not be ignorant about, and we should be open to hearing some of the experts and people that have been researching this stuff for a long time. And that's, mm-hmm, one thing I listened to the other day was someone named Don Huber, who's been studying plant disease for like over 50 years. And I listened to him on a podcast, so I'll have to send it to you, or I don't know if you have show notes, but
yeah, I can put them in the show notes. Yeah.
I just want to say a couple facts of some things for you to think about. First of all, in 2000, I mentioned that Monsanto patented glyphosate as a broad-spectrum antibiotic. So what do you think happens to your gut when you're consuming a lot of GMOs?
I don't even want to know. That sounds terrible.
So, yeah, that's an issue. And then it takes less than a tenth of a part per million to be toxic to the beneficial microorganisms in our gut. So less than a tenth of a part per million. Yet the EPA says it's fine to have 30 parts per million in grain and up to 400 parts per million in some food products. So
wow,
that's a fact of where the regulation is at right now. And here's another fact. In 2000, there's tons of various facts on GMOs that would scare you about it and just kind of make you want to learn more about, you know, what the regulations are, what kind of studies have been done.
Yeah.
A lot of the studies that have been done haven't studied, like, long-term health effects. They've studied, like, can people consume them and not drop dead next week?
Okay.
So that's where...
So we can eat them and not drop dead next week. Good to know.
But you can't eat them and thrive in the 419 long-term, that's for sure.
Or thrive anywhere, yeah.
So the other fact I learned was in 2009, Germany joined France, Hungary, Italy, Greece, Austria, Poland, and Romania in banning Monsanto's genetically modified corn because of its documented hazards to biodiversity and human health. And in 2007, over 3 million Italians signed a petition declaring their opposition to genetically modified crops in their country. There's tons of countries that have banned this stuff, but we haven't. Because it hadn't been proven to be, you know, cancerous. And
right,
we said, bring it on. Just let's just, every farmer can use it. And people just ran with it. And
right,
other countries said, hey, this hasn't been proven safe. So they decided to be really cautious and not use it. And so that's a big difference between where the United States is at with it versus other countries. But we do have a responsibility for understanding it and for being cautious about it. And at the very least, we could be cautious about their application, but it's used all over,
yeah,
and it's definitely concerning because it's really hard to break down glyphosate.
Yeah.
There are very few microorganisms that can break it down,
uh-huh,
and kind of chew at it and to get it off the land. So it's it builds up and builds up, and it creates plant toxins too. And so it's just like this problem that has problems, you know, falling off of it. So
right, and this is a livelihood for a lot of people, so it is understandable, mm-hmm. especially in, you know, living here in the mm-hmm. middle of cornfields, mm-hmm. that everybody's doing it. I mean, what else do mm-hmm. you do? I have some family members that converted their conventional farm to an organic really? Farm, and I have to say they I guess knew what they were doing, because they actually increased their profits doing
Sweet.
That. So, you know, I guess there's hope,
there's
but
hope.
It was a huge undertaking
I'm
for
sure.
them, and it cost a lot to
yeah.
convert. And they had to, they not only had to convert their fields, but they had to convert their machinery, too,
mm-hmm.
because they couldn't be using anything that had Roundup on it
mm-hmm.
or in it,
mm-hmm.
you know? So, like, all the little hoses and nozzles
mm-hmm.
and, like, everything
mm-hmm.
had to be replaced.
Mm-hmm.
And the regulations on the organic farm, they have so many hoops to jump through, so
right.
much paperwork.
Right.
I mean, they had, for a while, they had one person in their office just dedicated to doing the organic farm paperwork
mm-hmm.
For all of that. So, but, you know, they made a profit, and they are making a profit now.
Yeah, it's my understanding that you can make more if you can tough out the transition.
Yeah.
And it, I mean, it's selling for more, and it's becoming more valuable to have land that has not been doused in glyphosate. And
right.
So there's hope, and it's not like you have to change your occupation. You just have to change the way that you're doing some things in
right.
order to have something that's more sustainable. Because the fact of the matter is, it's just not a sustainable model. There's even super weeds that adapt to the glyphosate and work around it, and so then they become resistant, and so there's these weeds that are popping up that are stealing a lot of nutrients from the crops but are totally resistant to the chemical.
Okay, well, that makes sense. It's like the antibiotic epidemic where there are
mm-hmm.
super bugs now because
mm-hmm.
we're using antimicrobial hand wash
mm-hmm.
and
mm-hmm.
overuse of antibiotics and everything, so
mm-hmm.
that makes sense to me. So I guess what we need to do as consumers is to pay attention to what we're buying as well, because if we want people to stop spraying this stuff,
right.
we need to buy organic foods,
right.
and then the farmers will have somebody to sell it
right.
to. Like, there will be an incentive to
Which
change over, I guess.
A statistics I saw was, like, over 60% of consumers are seeking out non-GMO foods. So there's
Wow, that's a lot more than I thought.
Right, there's a big demand. And a lot of people want labeling, but unfortunately, you know, money talks, and it's just like a lot of other industries where it's profit over people, it's profit over health, you know, same thing for healthcare, and
yeah,
it's unfortunate. But the thing is, I just think a lot of farmers locally don't know that, it's essentially an antibiotic, and it's being, you know, widely used across all things, and
yeah.
not only is that potentially going into people and into, you know, canola oil and all that stuff, but it's going into the feed of animals, which is going into, you know, the meat. And beyond that, there's all sorts of infertility statistics,
mm-hmm.
not just within people, but within livestock as well. They talk about the endocrine disruption that
yeah.
it causes. And so there's just this huge domino of issues.
I feel like we've had such a good conversation, and in between me stopping and saving, we've continued to talk a lot. This has been so much fun, so thank you for being here.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm glad you're doing this, because Defiance could use this.
Yeah, and I'm really doing it for the whole 419, but being in Defiance, I do want to make sure that we don't overlook all of the things that are going on in these little rural towns
mm-hmm.
out here.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to just focus on Toledo or
mm-hmm.
potentially Findlay or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
I want to make sure that all those little crevices and corners in Northwest Ohio, like, people feel like there is a place where you can connect with somebody.
Mm-hmm.
So, first of all, tell us how people can connect with you.
Yeah. Well, I'm on Facebook, of course, and Instagram, and it's /Beetroot Brook for that, and then my Instagram handle is the same.
Beetroot Brook.
And then my Gmail is beetrootbrook@gmail.com. So that's the ways that you can connect, and My website's beetrootbrook.com too. So that has my event calendar on there, and you can, there's an email, you can text, you can call, you can write me a messenger on Facebook if you want.
Okay, great. And what helps you thrive in the 419?
Oh, a lot of work is really what it comes down to, like putting in the effort. And when I feel like throwing a pity party, or I feel like saying, I don't want to plan a meal today, or I don't want to do dishes, it is saying, what other option is there for me to be able to provide something nourishing? So I put in a lot of work, put in the effort to meal plan, to grocery shop, to drive out to the grass-fed farm. You know, that it really is a lot of work, because that is amongst all your other duties. And I guess just to relax about all those responsibilities, because the traditional way that people prepared food, they had a lot of time and a lot of their day was around preparing food. And so give yourself some time and slow down to be able to do that and to take time to go to the farmer's market and all that stuff. So I thrive by putting in all the effort and also just making time for the things that are really meaningful. Like we'll go catfishing at the river. Me and Dalton and I have done that since I was 16, and then now we take August down there to the river. So, And the river's right behind our house, that's why I say that.
Oh, that's convenient.
Yeah, nice. Just making time for the stuff that really matters, and you know, saying no to a lot of the busyness and you know, quote unquote functions that people expect you to attend. I just want to make sure I'm not missing out on special moments with my son and just with us as a family. And so all that good food feeds my belly, and then all that other stuff, you know, with our family and with good friends feeds my soul. So that's how I thrive.
Awesome. Thank you so much for being
Thank
here.
You. That was great.
Thanks for listening to the Thrive Tribe 419 podcast. If you'd like to join the conversation or see pictures and videos, check us out on Facebook and Instagram under Thrive Tribe 419. You can find show notes from today's episode or listen to more episodes at tt419.buzzsprout.com or on iTunes, Google Play, and Stitcher. If you enjoyed this podcast, it would mean a lot to me if you left a review wherever you listen to the show. Leaving reviews helps others find us and lets them know that we're the real deal. And it lets me know that you've been enjoying the show and that I'm not just sitting here talking to myself. Thanks, everybody. Have a great day and keep thriving.